Hello, you are listening to the Modern Web Podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee at Lady Leet on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.org. We are so lucky today to have Chase and Jonathan from Ember Weekend interviewing Luke Melia from Yap Labs. Chase and Jonathan, you guys do such amazing things with Ember Weekend. Can you guys just go ahead and quickly introduce yourselves?
I'm Chase McCarthy. I'm a co-host on Ember Weekend, where we talk about kind of new and interesting things going on in Ember.
Yeah, same here. We may not have mentioned this. Chase and I are both developers at HashRocket. It's a Rails consultancy in Jacksonville and with locations in Chicago and San Francisco. We really enjoy the Ember community. It's been like a really big part of the last couple years here for us. And Ember Weekend is kind of just a result of, you know, really we're just telling people what other cool stuff is happening in Ember. So it's pretty good.
Yeah, you guys do such great stuff, and I love following your Twitter handle at Ember Weekend. So everybody should go ahead and follow that. And then Luke, you have been doing really cool things. I'm especially excited about the last podcast. We were talking to Matt Beal, and he was talking about how Ember CLI deploy team sort of came together, and you know, you're doing some really cool stuff there, and with Yap Labs as well. Do you want to go ahead and just quickly tell us what you're up to?
Sure. Lots of things going on. So as you mentioned, I'm the co-founder of Yap and Yap Labs. I also organize Ember NYC, called by some the best Ember meetup in the world, but you know, it's debatable. And then lately, you know, the last year in particular, I guess, I've been working on the Ember CLI deploy project alongside a great team. And that's been really amazing to see it be, you know, that be adopted by the community and see how things evolve. Also, I want to mention I'm a huge fan of Ember Weekend. You guys are, you know, Chase and Jonathan, you're like my dishwashing companions. You probably don't know it.
Yes, dishwashing. That's good. So, Luke, could you tell us a little bit about how you got started in Ember?
Sure. So, I'll give you a little bit of background on Yap and kind of how that led us to Ember. So the idea behind Yap was to build a platform where anybody could create a mobile application. And we've refined that some and kind of found our niche in the marketplace and so forth. But originally, that was the concept. And one of the core experiences that we wanted was our editor experience. And we wanted our editor experience to be kind of feel like a desktop app. I know I thought a lot about kind of the old iPhoto app and these just kind of really visually rich and super responsive user experiences. And so I went out at the time looking around for something like that, and this is about 2011. And there were a few potential tools to use to build that in a browser. Cappuccino was one of them. SproutCore was another. And I looked at both of those and, you know, looked at SproutCore, and it seemed like a bit of a, you know, better match for us. I really liked that that Apple had used it, you know, to build MobileMe. I liked that, you know, I knew that Yehuda Katz was working on it, and you know, I was familiar with Yehuda's work from the Rails days. And so we said, hey, you know, let's go ahead and try building in this. And so we built the first version of the editor in SproutCore and, you know, learned a lot about the SproutCore code base and philosophy and so forth. And when it came time to build our mobile app, we initially made the not so good choice to try jQuery mobile. I don't know if anybody's ever tried that on the call, but man, that's pretty brutal. And so we said, okay, this is not going to work. And this at the time, you know, we were two engineers at Yap, myself and Chris Selden. And Chris and I said, you know, well, there's this SproutCore 2 thing under development over at Strobe, and it's kind of like SproutCore, which we just spent all this time learning to build the editor, but it's lower memory footprint, more modular, you know, seems like it could be a pretty good fit for mobile. How about we use that? And we made the rash decision to move forward with that. And a few months later, we had a, you know, pretty cool working experience. So running inside of PhoneGap with Ember, or then SproutCore 2 inside the WebView. And we went to the very first Ember meetup in San Francisco. And after the meetup, I think Tom presented and somebody else presented. And I, you know, after the meetup, I went up and introduced myself to Tom. And I took out my phone and I showed him what we had, and he was just blown away. You know, because at this point, there's probably, you know, 30 or 40 people, you know, 40 companies in the world who are in the early stages of experimenting with Ember. And so that was kind of the very beginning, and we became, you know, contributors to the framework largely because we were pushing performance boundaries, you know, running on mobile devices early on, and this, and just in general, kind of needed docs, needed features, et cetera. And it's been a really amazing experience to see the project develop from those early days to today.
That's really cool. I like that you had the idea for your app and for Yap, and the choice of technology was kind of driven by like what you needed. That's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's really hard, I think, to make technology choices, especially early in a company's lifetime. They have tremendous influence over the path that you end up taking, but you're making it with so little information. You know, and so you kind of have to take all signals. You have to take, you know, kind of your strategy, you know, the actual tech itself, you know, social signals is like, what's the adoption looking like on this thing? I mean, there was a period of time when Strobe was kind of imploding and it was announced that they were being acqui-hired by Facebook, that, you know, I thought for about a week that SparkCore 2 was just, you know, end of life. And we were, we had made a very, very, very bad choice. And then, you know, out of that rubble came, you know, the rumors that, oh, there's this team that's going to go off and do their own thing. This is what became Tilde. And they're going to continue to support and develop SparkCore 2, which obviously became Ember. And that was that kind of, for us, that saved our, you know, that choice. It made us look smart instead of really dumb.
So there was a brief period there where you were using Amber, not Ember, right?
Yeah, I think it was about a day.
About a day.
Yeah. So after that, you went on and you started your own Ember meetup, Ember NYC. So how long has that been going on? And, you know, what's it like hosting a meetup?
Yeah, I think the first Ember NYC meetup was April 2012. We kicked it off with a bang. We saw that Yehuda was going to be on the East Coast speaking at a conference in Philadelphia. So we arranged to have him come to New York after that. I actually went to that conference and we drove together from Philly to New York. And, you know, he gave that initial talk, the first meetup, which is nice because it's always good to start with a sold out first meetup, you know. And then it's ever since that, it's just been, you know, very steady, you know, month over month. We've been very fortunate to have a steady host, a venue host, which I think is probably the most critical thing in having a steady meetup. That's Pivotal Labs here in New York, and you know, every month they've got great space. Bring pizza in, let us drink their beer, and we've been fortunate to have just an amazing set of speakers. You know, from 2012 to today, I guess it's going to be 4 years in April, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. So with Ember NYC, do you find yourself doing a lot of community building related to Ember NYC, kind of in the associated space, or is it mostly the meetup and then what you do with Yap Labs and contributing to Ember itself?
So I think here in NYC, basically our strategy is we want to have one night per month that is kind of our core Ember NYC experience. And that's an evening of talks. It generally consists of 1 to 2 headline talks and 2 to 4 lightning talks. That's the night where everybody comes out. So, you know, we'll get anywhere from, you know, 80 to 150 people, you know, come out for those events, I would say. Those events can be sort of intimidating for somebody who's brand new to Ember or, you know, newer to development in general. And we want to help those folks come into the community and, you know, advance as well. So what we do is 1 to 2 times a month, we do a project night. We used to call them hack nights, and we saw Jamie White's, you know, talk at EmberConf and really liked the idea of the project night name. So we've adopted that. And it's anywhere, you know, anything from pair programming to a workshop kind of format to sometimes it's a, you know, kind of live consulting thing where there's an expert working with a newer person on a screen in front of a group that can ask questions and suggest ideas. And all those formats are awesome. And so we kind of like the mix there. But the key thing about those also is that they're a much smaller group. So we have anywhere from 15 to 30 people at those meetups. And we start off all of them by doing a round of introductions, so people have a chance to get to know each other. And my goal is to kind of have relationships form at those events. And so so people start to feel bond within the community and want to come back and, you know, kind of continue their exploration of Ember. So we do those two things. And then the other kind of big thing is just the recruiting speakers, finding speakers, encouraging people to do their first meetup talk ever, you know, usually a lightning talk. And that's been a pretty rewarding experience, just because, you know, if you guys have ever done a meetup talk and you can think back to your first one, it's so exciting. It's, you know, it's so exciting to like have done it. It feels very intimidating at first. And then, you know, after you've done a few of them, you're like, oh yeah, no big deal. But that very first one is a big step for people. And it's been great to kind of be able to be a part of facilitating that for folks.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. Boodaloop. How did you get started with Ember CLI Deploy? I know this started out as a bunch of different projects and you're all trying to do the same thing. And can you tell us the story behind that?
Yeah, I'll go back and I'll kind of go to the beginning, which is, we were trying to figure out how to deploy our own apps at Yap. And in the beginning, we just kept everything as part of one repo, and we deployed our Rails app, you know, which is our, kind of our back end, along with our Ember app at the same time, by doing Git push to Heroku and having a couple of, you know, rake tasks in the process that did the Ember build. And at that point, way back then, we were all using Ruby build tools, and it was slow. Was probably the biggest word to describe it. To deploy our Ember app plus our API, it was probably like a 7-8 minute process, and it was just frustrating. It was annoying, especially because, you know, a lot of times if all we were changing was JavaScript or CSS, this is literally like deploying, you know, 1 to 2 static files, and it's taking us 7 or 8 minutes. Is just silly. So around this time, we were hanging out with Eric Brin in New York, I think after a meetup one day, and he was telling us a little bit about Square's philosophy for deploying Ember apps, and they were doing something where they were deploying their HTML into Redis and had a query param where they could preview different versions of their Ember app. And I thought, wow, that is so cool. We put off working on it for a few weeks because it, you know, seemed like, wow, this is kind of a big development effort to kind of revamp our whole process. But finally, it became so frustrating waiting for those deploys that we said, you know, screw it. We're going to wait. We're going to put features off for a few days and build this thing. I think it took us about a week in total to kind of build the whole first version of this deployment architecture in Ruby. And once we had that going, it was so revolutionary for us. Deploys now were a matter of seconds. And everybody who I whiteboarded this solution for just was like, wow, that's awesome. And, you know, some people built it. A lot of people just wish that they had built it. And so I submitted a RailsConf talk to kind of try to share this a little bit more with the rest of the world. And it was the RailsConf talk ended up being a big hit and shared around a lot. And out of that talk began some open source projects in the Ember ecosystem that were node-based. Because by this point in time, you know, we were still on our legacy kind of Ruby build tools, but most of the rest of the Ember ecosystem that had kind of started after us were working with node-based tools. And I think Ember CLI was out by this point very early. So I kind of watched those projects with interest. And I submitted a talk the next year to EmberConf. And my idea was I just want to kind of do a survey of these tools and, you know, whatever solutions people are using to deploy apps. And the talk would kind of be like a summary of, hey, here's the different ways people are deploying. Here's some of the relative advantages and disadvantages of them. And there you have it. Well, during the process, I discovered in doing this research and talking with people that everyone was really trying to solve the same problem, and they had reached a lot of the same solutions, but all of the projects were kind of 1 to 2 person efforts. And so I looked at the kind of the core 4 of them that were just made the most sense, and I organized a Google Hangout, and we all got together, and I said, you know, I've got a proposal for you. What do you say we kind of come together and join this into one project that we can work on together instead of these four, you know, individual efforts. And everybody was really enthusiastic, which I didn't, you know, I didn't know how people would react. Obviously, there's some ego that's involved in having an open source project that you've created and you maintain, and, you know, for somebody to just, you know, call you up and say, hey, how about you stop doing that and, you know, put it in front, you know, inside of this other thing is, I could see that going badly. But to everybody's credit, they immediately kind of saw the advantages of having a team that could work on this. And we also found that because we had all been, the people who were developing these projects had all been part of the Ember community for a while, we kind of instinctively knew how to work together. So we instinctively knew a lot of, you know, this kind of typical open source practices that are happening in the Ember community. We knew what our audience was going to expect in terms of documentation, in terms of how this project would interact with the rest of their tools, in terms of what they would do in terms of, you know, giving back. And that was all because our audience was us, you know, we're Ember developers. And so in a lot of ways, the project, you know, the evolution of Ember CLI Deploy, so after that first EmberConf talk, we shipped a kind of unified release, which was basically Michael Klein's Ember Deploy project renamed to Ember CLI Deploy, which was the name of Aaron Chambers' project, cleaned up, and then with some docs put together that Sam Selikoff led the charge on. And so that came out right after EmberConf, and about 6 months later, Aaron and I committed to giving a talk at EmberCamp London, at which point in time we released version 0.5 of Ember CLI Deploy, which I think was really the result of us putting our heads together and saying, how can we design something that kind of worked really well with the existing tools, but even more than that, how could we design something that is going to be like catnip for Ember developers, right? Like that's just going to make so much sense to how we work and how we like to collaborate. And that was, you know, Ember CLI 0.5, and it's really been amazing. You know, from that day, the ecosystem has really just kind of exploded, and there's tons of awesome plugins, plugin packs. It's and you know, every day I hear about a new, you know, new project, a new app that's moved over to Ember CLI Deploy, and it's just super happy with how it's going. So that's the kind of story. It's, you know, a story of kind of community, organization, and understanding. It's a story of conference-driven development, which I'm a big fan of. and it's a story of teamwork from just an awesome group of folks around the world.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I know I've used, I think 0.5, that's when the pipeline was introduced.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, so yeah, I recently had a project where we used that for the deployment, and it was, I mean, everything was amazing. Yeah, I really like how fast the deploys are now. We don't have to deploy our Rails code base either, so that's another plus. We can make front end changes. So yeah, I really appreciate all the hard work everybody's putting in there.
Yeah, I want to say something that's not necessarily intuitive for folks, particularly who are newer to single page apps, about this idea of kind of deploying your front end app separately from your API. Because we used to, you know, we used to deploy them together, as I mentioned, and I didn't really think too deeply about whether that made sense or not. It just seemed fine. But the more time I've, you know, spent kind of thinking about deployment really deeply, the more I've learned, you know, come to feel like deploying those things together is kind of being dishonest with yourself. And what do I mean by that? Well, when you deploy kind of a new build of your Ember app and a new build of your API, and you think, oh, these things are designed to work together, so that's good, you're ignoring the people who have their browser open with your Ember app running, right, who are not going to instantly get your new JavaScript bits. However, they are going to instantly get your new API responses, the next API call they make. And so that's kind of a disconnect that making them part of the same project doesn't let you bring any nuance to that. Whereas when they're separate projects, you start to think of them much more, you know, like a native iOS or Android app where, hey, this is like, this code is sitting on somebody's phone somewhere, and I know I'm not going to be able to instantly update it. I'm under no illusions about that. And so I better make sure that any API changes that I make are going to be backwards compatible, or that I have a good versioning strategy, et cetera. And that's really much closer to the reality of what's happening with a single page app in deployment than it is, you know, to be, than it is to say that I'm going to deploy these at the same time and kind of move everybody over to my new Ember app and my new API at the same time. So just wanted to share that context, which I think, you know, comes with time and be, you know, kind of seems obvious after a little while, but maybe isn't upfront for folks.
Sam Selikoff did a little bit of work on with Ted on this thing called front-end builds. And I believe that that uses Ember CLI deploy in the back end, right, to deploy multiple sites and kind of, it's like a front-end management console for all those deployments?
Yeah, so front-end builds was one of the projects that we kind of brought under the umbrella. And it took a lot, you know, longer for front-end builds to come into the fold, Ember CLI deploy fold, than some of the other projects that started. But now, front-end builds is a Rails engine that has a cool Rails UI for kind of managing and seeing different revisions of your Ember apps. And then it's a plugin pack for Ember CLI deploy, which is based on based on communicating with the front end builds API that engine exposes. And so it's a kind of system that works really well together. And for folks, you know, somebody who's brand new to this world and has a Rails app that they want to add an Ember app to, this is a great kind of 1-2 punch to, you know, bring in that gem on the Rails side and Ember CLI deploy front end builds on the Ember side, and you're good to go.
Boodaloo. That's interesting. So you mentioned some of the challenges. How do you think about the separation of front end and back end? What are some of the other challenges that might be pitfalls to people who are just starting out with this type of architecture?
I think that in general, there's a category of pitfalls around deployment, and just that, you know, for good high performing web apps, there's a lot of little things you need to get right in terms of, you know, gzipping, fingerprinting, cache expiration, depending on, you know, the kind of approach you're using, HTTP cache headers, make sure that you're not, you know, your browser isn't requesting the app more than necessary. And so there's that kind of whole category of web performance, I think, things that you want to get right. There's also the category of things which is, okay, I want to be able to deploy to multiple environments and have kind of a clean way to separate that configuration. So I want to be able to deploy to my QA environment and my production environment, for example, is probably the most common use case. How do I do that, right? How is my configuration organized? I want to make sure that I don't commit my secrets, various API keys, et cetera, into my GitHub repository, because that's not a good idea. And so how do I use environment variables, to secure that information and keep it out of, keep it separate from GitHub and kind of manage it more securely. So those are a bunch of things. And historically, the way that those have been solved is by custom scripting. And so, you know, every app is going to have a pile of, you know, either grunt tasks or bash scripts or Ruby scripts or Node scripts around that kind of implements the specific deployment configuration that you happen to need. So maybe you've decided you're deploying your, JavaScript and CSS to Google Cloud Files, and you want to put Fastly in front of it as a CDN, and you're deploying your index to a Rails app that's running front end builds on the back end, so that gets served up by the Rails app. The nuances of what your specific configuration is going to vary, and that's something that Ember CLI Deploy kind of set out to try to accommodate much better, especially as of 0.5. But the biggest thing that the project does is just bring some structure to that mishmash. And once you bring structure, you bring reusability and composability. And so now there's lots of environments where people need to gzip their assets before they upload them. You don't need to implement gzipping for S3 and gzipping for Google Cloud Files and gzipping for my Colo server. You just use a gzip Ember CLI deploy plugin, and you compose it with the various other plugins that you need. And we knew as we were kind of designing this approach, we knew how much sense it would make to Ember developers. It just, that's the way. I mean, and developers in general, I think, ascribe to this, but the philosophy of the Ember community really kind of aggressively commoditizing these solutions to the problems that we share in common resonates with all of us. And so when we knew that when we released something that really took that approach, people would be attracted to it.
That's cool. I like the term aggressively commoditizing. I'm gonna write that down. That is good. Boop. So these solutions that you're finding, this common ground that you're commoditizing, like with, you know, shared solutions, are there places where this strategy can be leveraged in other ecosystems? I know Angular 2.0 is using Ember CLI as a build tool. Does the Ember CLI deploy project have any intention of maybe trying to make that work, or maybe just the ideas even?
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly open to it. Everybody in the project is building Ember apps day to day, and so that's kind of the space that we're focused on. And we, you know, when I talked about kind of how we leverage the Ember philosophy in terms of how we kind of, you know, organize and distribute the work and of developing and maintaining these, you know, plugins, we also are built, you know, and rely very heavily on Ember CLI. So we, every Ember CLI deploy plugin is an Ember CLI add-on. And we have a plugin discovery process that, you know, Ember CLI deploy runs, where it can basically automatically discover which of those add-ons that you have installed are deploy plugins, and then automatically kind of configure them to run step by step as you move through the deployment pipeline. So there's no reason that couldn't work for other ecosystems, but, you know, at least a big chunk of it would be a separate build if you were building on something besides Ember CLI itself. Now, you know, the news that, you know, I just learned relatively recently that Angular 2 was using Ember CLI under the hood. And it's very interesting. I think it's cool. The branding thing, as we, you know, saw recently, I saw on Twitter, you know, some process where there's some regexing going on, replacing Ember with Angular, you know, to kind of deliver the right kind of experience. That would be awkward for us as well, I think, for the Ember CLI deploy project. To figure out what that would mean exactly. But the truth is that, you know, most of our plugins have nothing to do with Ember itself, and could certainly, you know, work for, you know, other types of frameworks. So we would be very open to, you know, working with somebody who wanted to step up, you know, kind of from one of those ecosystems and figure out, you know, how we could be supportive there.
That's really interesting. Really interesting. Boodaloop. So I think Chase has some technical questions that he wanted to go through.
Right. I wanted to ask you about your, you know, you said you're really attracted to the idea of deploying the index HTML through Redis, and that gave some benefits. I think you kind of went over some of them, but could you go over the kind of the alternatives to that, and like just putting the index HTML in the like same S3 bucket as the rest of your assets, and what are the pros and cons?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I remember, you know, very vividly sitting around the Yap office talking about like, man, where could we put this HTML so that we could serve it up? And S3 was definitely one of the contenders. You know, we thought about like, could we get it on to kind of each of our web servers? But, you know, we were serving off of Heroku, so our web servers were kind of these transient dynos anyway. So that didn't really make a lot of sense. We said, well, we could put it in our database, you know, running Postgres, you know, that might work. Seems a little weird to store these huge blobs in the database, but it could work. And we already had Redis in our environment also. And we said, man, you know, out of all these things that I just described, the thing that has the lowest latency and the simplest API for kind of getting stuff in and out is Redis. And so what that meant is that it's almost as fast as kind of having it in memory. And so what it means is that when a user requests the Ember app from our Rails application, we can read it out of Redis and send it out to the user, you know, within a couple of milliseconds. Or we could spend a few more milliseconds and do some other kind of interesting things there. And this is what started to really appeal to me about this idea, is that because of the flexibility that's inherent. So, you know, what are some of those other things? Well, we could look for a particular query param and say, hey, if there's a, I think we called it manifest back in the day. I said, if it's like there's a manifest query param, instead of looking for the current version of the HTML in Redis, we're going to look for the one that's versioned with this manifest ID, and we're going to serve that up. And what that means is that when we deploy our new version, we could deploy it but not activate it immediately. And we could allow us, you know, us as developers to smoke test the new Ember app in production, talking to the production API without any risk because our users are still using the previous version. So that was super powerful. Along with that goes the ability to both activate but also to roll back. And you know, this is just a matter of kind of switching what certain Redis keys are pointing to. And then we've taken it even a step further and to do some other kind of interesting rewriting of the HTML on the way out, because when the request comes in, we have kind of the cookie context, the session context for the user who's making the request for this page. And so we can do some interesting things there. One of the things that we could do is we could grab some of those that user's details and encode them in JSON in the HTML document on the way back, saving that kind of initial API call for example, and letting you immediately render, you know, say the header that shows that the user is logged in with their profile picture and name, for example. Another thing that you can do is you can say, hey, is this user part of a particular A/B test bucket? And if they are, then you can write particular JavaScript, global or something into your HTML that makes the Ember, the app, then treat them as a member of that A/B bucket and shows them, the feature that you're evaluating, for example. And so, so those are just kind of a few of the things that are, enabled by having a low latency store that you're running the HTML kind of through a dynamic web server. This is certainly not the only way to do it. Plenty of people, especially people who are looking for kind of a simple way to get moving and don't even necessarily have an API server that they control yet, use kind of a fully AWS S3 bucket strategy where they're serving their assets as well as their index out of S3, sometimes with CloudFront in front of it, sometimes not. And that's perfectly, works perfectly well. You just don't have the ability to do as much dynamic, interesting stuff as you do if you've got a dynamic web server, app server in front of it. Does that answer your question, Chase?
Yeah, that was exactly, what I was thinking. I've had cases where I really wanted to, use all those good features of being able to, push a kind of a staging, something that was kind of ready for production. I'm pretty sure I just wanted to really test it out before I really pulled the trigger. And then other cases, we just kind of always wanted just simple deploys. So it's nice to have that flexibility. I actually haven't thought about the writing in the user details we're always doing this from Rails. But yeah, you could, gsub something in there and, replace the, put the user details in there. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, we actually do it with a meta tag with JSON encoded content, just like the Ember environment is encoded. We encode the user's details about the current logged in user there.
Boodaloo. So could you take a minute and just kind of explain the current ecosystem for plugins around Ember CLI Deploy?
Sure. So I mentioned that every Ember CLI Deploy plugin is an Ember CLI add-on. And so you install Ember CLI Deploy plugins the same way you install regular add-ons, which is Ember install plugin name. And the plugins have code, the contract is basically that they have a method that they expose in Node land from their index file, which is called create deploy plugin. And it needs to return an object which has methods that match, technically zero or more hooks. And these hooks are what we call steps of the deploy pipeline. We actually have a few different pipelines. We have kind of your main deploy pipeline that runs when you run Ember deploy. We often have a pipeline that runs when you run Ember deploy list, which lets you see your revisions, a pipeline that runs when you run Ember deploy activate, which lets you activate a particular revision. And to give you some examples of some of the hooks that exist in the deploy pipeline, there are things like will build, build, did build. There's will upload, upload, did upload. Will activate, activate, did activate in the event that that those are active in the case that you're running your deploy command with dash dash activate. And then at the very end, there's did deploy, which is a great place where some of the notification plugins hook into. And so the idea was that we want to have kind of enough plugin hooks that plugins can work together to really easily compose some interesting behavior, but not too many that it gets overwhelming or is hard to understand. And if folks who are listening are curious about this, the slides that and video that Aaron Chambers and I put together for the Ember Camp London talk is out and visually illustrates all, you know, everything that I'm talking about here. So that's definitely worth a look. And so anyway, each of these pipe, each of these hooks, when they run the corresponding plugin method with the same name, they have access to a context object, which is kind of populated and morphed as it moves through each step of the pipeline and has each plugin adding information to it and reading information off of it. And so those you know, collaborate together to, in the end, form a, you know, very repeatable deployment process that has really clean output as of 0.6 beta, which is out now, and 0.60 is coming soon. There's a cool progress bar for your default output. If you run with dash dash verbose, you have a really cool kind of tree structure visualization of your deployment pipeline and the plugins hooks that are running at each stage of it. So that's the kind of core core concept. Plugins are very simple to author. I would say most of them are probably between, you know, 30 and 300 lines of code. You know, there's not a whole lot to them, which is cool. And then there's, on top of that, kind of one of the most interesting innovations of 0.5 is this idea of a plugin pack. And a plugin pack is a really simple idea that has really, you know, cool implications. And that's that if you declare yourself this plugin as a plugin pack, Ember CLI Deploy will look at your dependencies and try to discover other Ember CLI Deploy plugins among those dependencies and incorporate them into your pipeline. And so what this means is that if you have, you know, three or four apps that your team works on at your company, and you deploy them all the same way, generally speaking, which is the most common use case, then you could create a plugin pack that kind of wraps up the standard set of plugins that you're using, and even wraps up a lot of the standard configuration if you want, and to make it really easy to, you know, manage that over the core, you know, over three or four apps. So I think that's probably the best that I can do in an audio format to explain this. It's the kind of thing that really benefits from diagrams.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, that sounds great. Especially, I really like the fact that they're simple to author. The 30 to 300 lines of code, that sounds really appealing to me as somebody who's written a lot of Capistrano scripts and things like that. It can get pretty gnarly pretty quickly. So the reusability and the simplicity of authorship is super exciting. I actually just looked. I suspected. I thought I had seen it before, but Ember Observer has a deployment, subcategory, and it has like 82 plugins. So like already blowing up. So that's really, really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. You know, I want to say one particular thing about that, and as it relates to plugin packs, which is a bunch of companies have been making their own plugin packs and making them public, just so other people can kind of see, you know, what set of plugins is Yap using, or what set of plugins is Movable Ink using, and that's been a really cool trend to see, and I hope we see more of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So wait a second. So you said Yap has your packs published?
Yeah. So cool. If you look at Ember CLI Deploy Yap Pack, it's on NPM, and you can follow the link to the GitHub repo from there. It's a plugin pack. It's pretty simple, but it does illustrate how to share configuration really well between your plugins. And it also illustrates a really cool aspect of plugin packs, which is that they're recursive. So the Ember CLI Deploy Yap pack has two key dependencies besides Ember CLI Deploy. It has the Ember CLI Deploy Lightning pack, which is a Ember CLI Deploy core team supported plugin pack that, you know, wraps up a few different things for doing this kind of S3 plus Redis style deployment. And then in addition to that plugin pack, it also has a dependency on the Slack notification plugin that Michael Klein built. And so that's kind of what we do, is we use the standard Lightning pack that the core team supports, and then we want to notify ourselves in our own Slack channel. And so you can take a look at that. That's all open source, as well as, you know, all its dependencies are open source also.
Awesome. Very cool. Awesome. I'm definitely going to check that out.
So you just said there were a lot of companies publishing their packs. So what other kind of companies out there that are using Ember CLI Deploy?
That's a good question. So obviously, you know, they don't have to tell us when they use it. I know here in New York, there's Monograph, Movable Link, Yap, and TED, of course, that uses it. I know that Robert Jackson is working on looking at moving Twitch over to it in some areas, which would be cool. I'm trying to think who else. Literally, you know, we help people like every single day in the Ember CLI Deploy Slack channel and the Ember community Slack with, you know, getting their stuff up and running. So given that we help somebody every day and that they're successful, there's got to be, you know, at least 300 or so companies on there.
Right. And I saw, so we deploy to Firebase right now, but we've been trying out PageFront. And I saw they use Ember CLI Deploy as their main, you know, deployment. I guess they don't really have a pack. It's just I think it's just Ember PageFront or something like that. But that works really well.
Yeah, it does. I think it is technically a plugin pack if you look under the hood. Yeah, it was interesting because you know, Ember CLI Ember PageFront, we didn't know that they were working on this. Yeah, as we were kind of working on the run up to 0.5.0, and they were really early adopters. Which was, you know, cool to see. So they had their stuff ready for, you know, beta kind of at the same time as we had our stuff ready for beta, which is pretty amazing. But it's great. We want to see, you know, we want to see lots of creativity on top of the platform. And that's why, you know, we've kind of tried to make Ember CLI Deploy relatively thin. It follows the kind of worse is better philosophy of, you know, it doesn't have a lot of, you know, whistles and bells, but it has a very core, strong kind of central concept that's easy to grok and then build on top of.
So we were talking to Matthew Beal last podcast. I want to say that was a week ago or so. And he talked a little bit about the structure of some of the sub-teams around Ember. So he just released a Be the Bark blog post and talk. When he was talking about that, he talked about Ember Data and some of the other sub-teams. But then he got to Ember CLI Deploy, and it was kind of a really cool thing because Ember CLI Deploy was basically like self-created. It was created by the community, not necessarily through the core team. Do you want to talk about how you structure? And I know you have like a similar structure to Ember's core team as far as how you deal with you know, features and deployments and releases. Could you walk us through kind of how that came to be and maybe like if you think that is something applicable for other projects in the space?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so this was definitely not a designed or on purpose thing. It was sort of a natural evolution out of the process that I described, you know, earlier of bringing these projects together from folks that have been involved in the community for a while. You get a sense of how things work well, of what kind of leadership is required for you know, for an open source project in general and one in the Ember ecosystem in particular. And so we, of course, you know, wanted to provide that. And I would not say that we've gone out of our way to try to mimic the Ember core teams or the Ember sub teams. You could say that it's sort of we're like an echo of those teams, maybe. Like we've absorbed everything of kind of that we know, at least, of how those teams work, what, you know, what makes sense. And we've incorporated the things that, you know, that make sense in our context. You know, I remember kind of fondly a lot of the early days of the Ember ecosystem, where there was it was much smaller, much less mature, and there was a lot less ceremony involved in making changes to core, for example. You know, nowadays, with very good reason, you know, there's an RFC process, there's, you know, canary beta stable process. And it's much less, you know, the wild west that it, you know, was closer to in the early days, which is again really good for the stability and maturity of that project. That kind of less, more casual or faster development process has been pushed out to the edges of the Ember ecosystem, as it should be. And Ember CLI Deploy is kind of an example of that. So our ceremony in the Ember CLI Deploy core team is much less than what the Ember core team needs to deal with. We can, you know, we think about backwards compatibility, but we don't have to think about it, you know, as with as much as much fear or focus necessarily as the Ember Core team does. And we can make changes and move, you know, kind of move at the pace that, that we know that we want to. So so there's that aspect of it. I'm trying to think, we try to be relatively transparent. So, you know, we had our first face-to-face in October after Ember Camp London. Aaron Chambers and myself were there. Mattia Guetta was there. Pepin Schoen was there. Sam Salikoff and Michael Klein couldn't make that event, but we tried to loop them in remotely when we could. And we published notes from those, and I think that that's pretty great. And I would like to do more of that, but we don't have weekly meetings. We don't do anything really more formal than that. We have a Slack that we hang out in, that's a private kind of contributor Slack, which we regularly invite other folks to join us in who are working on different things within the ecosystem. And then we also pay a lot of attention to the channel that I mentioned in the community Slack, the Ember CLI Deploy channel. So I think that's kind of a summary of the team aspect to it. It's relatively informal, and people pick up Slack and contribute when they can. You know, Aaron Chambers recently had a baby, and so he was off the map with, you know, as he should be for several weeks. But now he's back and digging in again to help push things forward.
Boodaloo. Sounds like you have a ton of stuff going on, but also a ton of great people helping you out. And I know you're pretty busy. So you're also a dad, and you have a ton of other commitments. Is there anything else that people can help you with? Are you looking for any specific help in areas, you know, kind of in or around Ember CLI Deploy?
The biggest thing that people can do in Ember CLI Deploy is to use it, to adopt it and move their apps over to it, and then give us feedback to what worked, didn't work. If you find yourself needing a plugin that doesn't exist, take the plunge to try to create it. If you, need help, pointers, just ask anybody on the team. The Slack channel is a good place to do that. And that's how the community grows. And, you mentioned earlier that there's 82 NPM packages now. I expect that to just kind of continue to grow, and for all of those packages to get stronger and more stable and mature as more people adopt the framework. And this is the same philosophy as everything else in Ember, which is, there's very little, at least, that is a unique snowflake about our deployment processes. There's very few companies that are going to have make or break moments based on how they deploy their app. And so, let's share the load of the development effort on it and kind of just get it done. I will say, on the Ember NYC side of things, I'm always looking for speakers. And New York City is a pretty awesome place to visit. So if you are an Ember developer or someone who has something interesting to say about Ember from elsewhere in the world, who's planning a trip to NYC, get in touch and we'll see if you overlap with the meetup, and we'll get you up on stage and in front of the live stream. I think those are probably the biggest things people can do to help.
I know we're definitely trying to make our way up to New York and get to one of these meetups.
I would love that.
Yeah, we basically cannibalize at least pretty much every Ember NYC meetup. We cannibalize and turn that into one Ember weekend because so many good talks. So, yeah, I would definitely like to be up there.
Yeah, it's been cool for me to see. Ember NYC has become a place where when people have things that they really want to introduce to the community and make a splash at a time of year when like EmberConf isn't happening, for example, Ember NYC is kind of the place to do that. And so, this past month, we had Tom Dale showing the status of Fastboot, which has come a long way. And then coming up in a couple of weeks, Alex Metchnier is kind of showing his Ember concurrency add-on, which is ready for prime time or will be ready for prime time then, and has a lot of really interesting ideas in it.
Yeah, I'm really excited about Ember concurrency, though. I couldn't tell you what Ember CSP stood for at this point, which was the original name. But yeah, I think Ember concurrency is a smart name change.
Definitely a much better name.
I really like to ask these like broad questions at that very end. So this is kind of broad and take it wherever you want. How do you kind of see the Ember ecosystem evolving over the next, year or so?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think when I think back to previous years, I think about, man, how much I wished for kind of a standard set of build tools that didn't cause people, a pain in the ass to, using Ruby or using, Grunt. And we, now Ember CLI is, pretty mature and pretty awesome. And I wished for a day that would come where we could have a really good mechanism for sharing code within the community. It's hard to imagine now in today's add-on ecosystem that there was a time where like it was really, really hard to share code between projects. And that's come to pass. The Ember testing story has come an enormous way. And there's, you know, there's still, I think, you know, some exciting stuff coming up in the near future with the Grand Unification RFC that's up now that Robert Jackson's championing. And so looking forward, you know, I think the big things that I'm excited about right now are Fastboot and then Glimmer and really performance of all stripes, but, you know, Glimmer in particular. And I think what is probably the most interesting thing that I'm looking forward to, and this is really good in the context of the Modern Web podcast, is what's going to happen to the kind of overall ecosystem around all these frameworks. Do they kind of continue to develop independently? Do they continue to proliferate where there's, you know, new JavaScript frameworks erupting every day? You know, or do other folks kind of come around to some of the values that the Ember community holds dear in terms of like not wasting our time trying to figure out which tools work well with other tools and just kind of trying to, again, share our knowledge, share our code together to focus on the things that matter for our applications, the things that really make us unique and are going to make us make or break us in the marketplace. So that's the thing that I'm keeping my eye on and going to see, you know, whatever I can do to kind of help influence.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Those are kind of the things I'm excited about as well. I think looking at it with that, you know, a little bit of hindsight as well, where you think about like where the testing story was and how all of these different things, how we were looking forward to those at the time and now they've kind of come to pass and that trend to continue is pretty interesting. I've not really thought about it that way where it's like, oh yeah, we were all excited about this thing. And like, now that it's done, we're like, we don't think about it nearly as much because it's just, you know, it's a given, you know. Ember CLI is a really good point there, I think, because Ember CLI has not always existed and it is just like, that is de facto now. So, yeah, definitely.
Not even just an Ember, like every JavaScript project that I spin up, I use Ember CLI and it's like, I just don't even know what I would do if I didn't have Ember CLI. I'd be building massive grunt files and things. And I'm so thankful for that.
Right. Please don't make me go back.
Yeah, you just put it all in these files and the asset pipeline will concat them. Then you just have to deal with the order yourself.
Right.
No big deal. No big deal.
Yeah. NBD. Yeah, no, whatever.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for sitting with us. This has been really awesome. I really love the work you do. I really respect you. I'm super stoked about getting the opportunity to come here and talk with you. So thanks for coming out. And yeah.
Hey, the feeling's likewise. Love what you guys are doing with Ember Weekend. Keep it up.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Modern Web Podcast. You can follow Chase at code0100fun. That's code for fun. You can follow Jonathan at rondale_sc. Ron, what is that? Or Jonathan, see? Sometimes I call you Ron.
Yeah.
What does it stand for anyways?
It doesn't really stand for anything.
Okay.
It's just a long old gamer tag.
Right. Legacy gamer tags.
Yeah, legacy gamer tags.
And then you can follow Luke at Luke Melia, LukeMelia. And Modern Web at ModernWeb_ on Twitter. So thank you again, guys, for being a part of the show. Thanks for listening. To find more podcasts, videos, and online conferences, check out modern-web.org or find us on Twitter at modernweb_. See you around the internet.